Our second paper will be presented by Marianne Plaatjes van Huffen. She teaches church polity and church history and presents a paper with a fascinating title, Human Rights and Human Dignity, Drone Operations and the Quest for Common Good in Modern Warfare.
Thank you, Chair, for the invitation. My title is Human Rights, Human Dignity, Drone Operation and a Quest for Common Good in Modern Warfare. There's an abstract in, on top, so I'm going to read it. Maybe there's not enough time, then you know exactly where I want to head, maybe to at the end. In this presentation, I will firstly attend to the following: the use of armed drones in modern warfare and the legal grounds for engaging in the drone operation. Attention will be given to international laws, i.e. the Geneva Convention of 1949, international humanitarian law, international human rights law, as well as United Nations General Assembly Resolution December 2013 regarding the use of remote piloted aircraft, and the United Nations General Assembly 2013 adopted a resolution called on all states using drone strike as a counter-terrorism measure to comply with international law. I will attend at the end of this presentation to the World Council of Churches' position on drone operations and the right to life and death. And right at the end, I will make some few suggestions with regard to the common good in modern warfare. Uses of drones in modern warfare. Unmanned combat aerial vehicles, commonly known as drones, are aircrafts with no pilot on board. It are remote control aircrafts with pre-programmed as the ability to fly autonomously. Drones can conduct a surveillance and specially equipped fire weapons that are able to hit targets of interest, including killing individuals. Drones are originally developed to gather intelligence and conduct surveillance, but nowadays one can see for one that these drones have become of the major modern warfare breakthroughs, have slowly started to become the weapons of choice for those who can afford to own it. It is a very costly endeavor to have drones, so you must remember that sentence, those who can afford to own it. The aircraft industry has been slowly growing over the years. The fear is that the number of countries with the capacity to use drones is likely to increase significantly in the near future. High-tech militaries, including the United States of America, Israel, Russia, and the United States, will likely move towards systems that would give them full combat autonomy to machines. And aircraft enable those who control lethal force not to be physically present when it deployed, but rather to activate it while sitting behind computers in faraway places and stay out of the line of fire. Critics of drone call it nothing more than one-sided killing or assassination. The use of drones has increasingly posed serious threats to humanity, especially to the right of life. Despite argument as to the benefits of the use of drone in reducing the risk of military casualties, it had been constantly observed that drone strikes are counterproductive and tell loss of innocent civilian lives and have human rights and humanitarian applications. Therefore, UCAVs are either controlled by pilots from the ground, autonomously follow a pre-programmed mission, can kill innocent civilians and raise numerous ethical questions. That's what I want to attend to in this presentation today. The use of UCAVs first made operational in the Balkan War has subsequently escalated in Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, Somalia, Libya, and in Pakistan. The use of drones has resulted in a large number of persons being killed along with the intended target. Means used for target killings include, amongst other, drones. Hundreds of missile attacks from unmanned aircrafts have been carried out against suspected militants during the course of time. For example, in the majority of Israel, targeted killings have reportedly taken place in the Area A in a part of the West Bank under the control of Palestine authorities. The targets have included members of various groups, including Fatah, Hamas, and Islam Jihad, who Israel authorities claim were involved in planning carrying out attacks against Israel civilians. But something developed nowadays we call little autonomous robotics. We call it the economic diverse loss. On the other side is weapons systems that once activated can select and engage targets without further human intervention. That's a major crisis and ethical problem which we have to attend to today. The robot had an autonomous choice regarding selection of target and use of lethal force. LAS would be able to take autonomous decision about their own use. Autonomous needs to be distinguished from automatic or automated side as which UCAS where there is a human in the loop in full autonomy on the other side as of LAS where human beings are out of the loop. So that is the difference between the two. The one, it is there's a human in the loop, UCAS, but with LAS, there isn't any human being out of the loop. Robots with full lethal autonomy have not yet been deployed. However, robotic systems with various degrees of autonomy and lethality are currently in use. Pro-unmanned activists argue that UCAS for IF force projection, preserving the lives of one's own soldiers in force multiplication, allowing few personnel to do more. They are capable of enlarging the battlefield, penetrating more easily behind the enemy lines, and saving on life, on human and financial resources. Unlike manned aircraft, they can stay in the air for much longer hours. It is approximately from two hours and as much as 336 hours it can stay in the air. Additionally, they are much less expensive to operate than military aircraft as they are flown remotely without a flight crew. Unmanned systems can stay on station much longer than individuals and withstand other impediments such as G-force. The just at bellum right of self-defense lies at the heart of the current extraterrestrial drone operation. It also asks whether there are geographical boundaries to an armed conflict with that international rights law rather than international humanitarian laws applies to drone operations conducted beyond its perimeters. The use of drones for targeted killings has generated significant controversy globally. The question you will ask, what is it has to do with us? But I do think that we in the African continent should take all the cognizance of this discourse. The drone debate is not only an issue which should be attended to by the so-called developed countries of the West. So we must look at the legal grounds for engaging in what we call now drone operation. There is what we know the international humanitarian law and international human rights law are complementary. Both strive to protect lives, health, dignity of individuals, albeit from a different angle. Humanitarian law applies to situations of armed conflict, whereas human rights, or at least some of them, protect the individual at all times in war and peace alike. The drone operation brings the whole issue of the international human law, international human rights to the central stage. IHL is a set of rules which seek for humanitarian reasons to limit the effects of armed conflict. It protects persons who are not or not longer participating in hostilities, for example, civilians of medical or religious military personnel, and restrict also the means, in particular weapons and methods of warfare. It also protects those who have ceased to take part, such as the wounded, the shipwrecked, the sick, the combatants, and the prisoners of war. IHL is also known as a law of war or law of armed conflict. Therefore, IHL prohibits all means and methods of warfare which fail to discriminate between those taking part in the fighting, those such as civilians, who are not the purpose being to protect the civilian, individual civilians, civilians, property, cause, etc., etc. The major part of HIL is contained in the Geneva Convention of 1949. Nearly every state in the world had agreed to be bound by them. The Geneva Convention had been developed and supplemented by two further agreements, namely the Additional Protocols of 1977. So you can see there, I'll name it quite clearly on that paragraph, by the end of it is very maybe important. Other agreements prohibit the use of certain weapons and military tactics and protect certain categories of people and goods. These agreements include the 1972 Biological Weapon Convention, 1993 Chemical Weapon Convention, the 1997 Ottawa Convention on Anti-Personnel Mines. Humanitarian law has therefore banned the use of many weapons, including exploding bullets, chemical and biological weapons, blinding weapons, as well as anti-personnel mines. Therefore, the international human rights law is closely related to but distinct from HIL. They are closely related because the substantive norms they contain are often similar or related. Both provide, for example, protection against torture. They are distinct because they are regulated by legal, discrete frameworks and usually operate in different contexts and regulate different relationships. And that we should keep in mind when we speak about can we maybe honor this whole thing about UCAFs and target the killing, etc., etc. I'm going to the last of this paragraph. The question is on number two. The question is, do drone attacks comply with international humanitarian law? One should remember that IHL applies only to armed conflict. It does not regulate whether a state may actually use force. Some argue that robots could never meet the requirement of international humanitarian law or international human rights law, and that even if they could, as a matter of principle, robots could not be granted the power to decide who shall live and die. These critics call for a blanket ban on their development, production, and use. The legal principle of international accountability is but comprehensible, violated by drone attacks. Phil S. Alston, a New York University lawyer who had also served as United Nations Special Rapporteur on extrajudicial summary or arbitrary execution, said that drone attacks are the intentional, premeditated, and deliberate use of lethal force by states or their agents acting under color of law or by an organized armed group in armed conflict against a specific individual who is not in the physical custody of the perpetrator. Drone attacks raise a number of questions, including possible conflict with existing international humanitarian law. This includes the question of the extent to which drones can be programmed to comply with the requirements of international humanitarian laws and the standard protecting life under international human rights law. Alston argues that the way targeted killings, especially drone attacks, are currently handled poses significant problems under the international law. Now I'm going to attend shortly to United Nations resolutions, and on that part you can see the resolutions which the United Nations took. Now you remember that United Nations was founded in 1948, and for the past 70 years, armed conflicts by no means was a thing of the past, but we didn't have a global war. But the problem with this drones is bringing for us new problems to the fore. So we have at the General Assembly of United Nations in 2013, two United Nations Special Rapporteurs presented their reports on drone warfare to the United Nations General Assembly. One of them had been is a South African named Christoph Heinz. He's a law professor in South Africa. And the report of the United Nations Special Rapporteur focused on the lethal autonomous robots and observed that drones enable a state to perform target killing without exercising effective control over territory and having the individual in custody. So he asked in a lot of questions which should have been attended to by the, and the whole question was about self-defense, is it, and the collateral loss of the life of individuals and the attacks of, and so forth. But what's interesting on this whole part, which I want to convey to you, is what the Secretary General Ban Ki-moon then said when it visited Pakistan in 13 August 2013. He then stated the use of armed drones like any other weapon should be subjected to long-standing rules of international law, including humanitarian law. At the end of this, in December 2013, the General Assembly of the United Nations adopted the resolution urging that the international community using drone strikes as a counter-terrorism measure to observe international laws with regard to the use of remoted aircrafts. So that was decided then upon. So I'm now coming to number four at the question of common good and a violation of a country's sovereignty. Concerning this whole issue, you can see what is sovereignty, and you can see it is about a threat to what was already in Westphalia in 1648, about the United Nations said quite clearly what is what we are thinking and what is important about the sovereignty. And the whole issue is that that what is happening with this whole drones is the following. I'm going to read the last part of it. the law of sovereignty addresses the legality of crossing into another state's territory to conduct drone strike. Sending armed aircraft in another state's territory to conduct airstrike is prima facie a violation of that country's territorial integrity and therefore its sovereignty. Such actions should equal amount to the use of force against a state, and it is against what is in the United Nations Charter Article 2.4. The United Nations argue that all UCAVs should be strictly regulated and controlled under international law, including international humanitarian law. I'm going to drone operation right to life. In this part, I'm attending to the World Council Churches. The first part is again about what is exactly what is UCAVs and what is LASH in the way it was tabled at the past WCC, and at the next part of it you can see quite clearly the report of a special rapporteur of the United Nations provides special recommendations to the United Nations, but not only to recognize the United Nations, also to regional intergovernmental organizations as well as states, as well as to the developers of robotic systems, as well as NGOs, civil societies, society, human rights group, and the international community of the Red Cross. The WCC took a note thereof and attend to it at their last meeting, and already you can see in 1983 at Vancouver as well as 1998 in Harare, they attend to the issue. And lastly, in the past General Assembly of the World Council Churches in Korea, they attend to the whole issue, and they then issued a fully fledged statement concerning the uses of UCAVs in modern warfare, and you can take cognizance thereof. And even in the beginning of this year, in February 2014, they said quite clearly the WCC conviction that every person is made in the image of God, and caution that drone operations should also create serious international division, weaken the role of the international law. And you can take cognizance there of what I try to convey there on conclusion. I'm going to the conclusion there. Okay? The conclusion, I'm going to read the conclusion very quickly through. And the use of drones raises numerous complex moral, ethical, and legal dilemmas. Common good or common will is a specific good that is shared and beneficial for all or most members of a given community. And the common good is a notion that originated over 2,000 years ago in the writings of Plato, Aristotle, in Cicero, and is a central concept of a Catholic social teaching is also the common good, which whose meaning is close to the traditional term common will. Even Augustine of Hippo, Magnus Opus, City of God, Book 19 focus on the question, is the good life social? In other words, is human well-being found in the good of the whole society, the common good? Augustine emphatic answer is in the affirmative. Augustine's understanding was taken up under the influence of Aristotle, developed by Thomas Aquinas. Aquinas' conception of the common good becomes standard in the Roman Catholic moral theology. And I do think that churches should take cognizance thereof again in the deliberation concerning this issue. John Rawls, a philosopher, defined the common good as central general condition that are equally to everyone's advantage. The concept common implies all inclusive. The common good cannot exclude exempt any exception of the population. Common good requires an admission of individual basic rights in society. The common good must also serve the good of the individual and involves the ordering of social institutions towards human fulfillment or flourishing, as well as the rights and duties which are the concern of the entire human family. Notion of the common good moved deeply against the postmodern individualistic grain. At times in the past, the common good has been presented as an idea in opposition to the rights of individual. Therefore, it means that it was totally rejected in most cases. Recent social teaching has been seen the common good as a guarantor of the individual right and as the necessary public content in which conflicts of individual rights and interests can be adjudicated or reconciled. Drone operations therefore present currently grave dangers to core human values into the international security system as well as to the common good of us all. Drone operations have disastrous consequences for the human rights of affected population and result in disproportionate levels of civilian casualties. The advent of laws requires all involved states, international organizations, international and national civil organizations, as well as five big organizations, to consider the full implications of embarking on this road. An international discussion is needed to consider the appropriate approach to laws. The possible introduction of laws should be approached with great caution. If used, they should have far-reaching. They are going to have far-reaching effects on societal values, including fundamentally on the protection and value of life in international peace and stability as well as security. Maybe I believe the time has arrived to replace the current ethics of individual rights with an ethic of the common good. I thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. UCAFS, a new abbreviation I didn't know until now. We have time for questions, so who is the first to stand up? If we have no questions, I have one question. Would it be different if a UCAF had no killing capacity, but only a surveillance capacity?
I'm not against most of the people, ethicists across the globe, are not at this point against any development like this. I think what is needed, what I plead, is that something like robo-ethics should be maybe on the universities, be maybe part of models and so on. But what's needed, it is, we need surveillance, and that is what is needed. So it's not about the surveillance capacity, it is about the build in of too much intelligence in robots that they can make decisions of life and death. That is the problem. It is an ethical thing, which is a moral. The question is nowadays is, can robots have a moral agency? That is the main question.
Thank you very much for your presentation. I just have a question pertaining to your last sentence of your paper. Maybe the time has arrived where you mentioned this fact from an ethic of individual rights to an ethic of the common good. And I think there's power in that statement. The question is, of course, is it necessary to put these two emphases over against each other, or is there a way of thinking them together in a responsible way?
Thank you, Professor. Professor Foslow, I do think me as being a human rights activist for a very long time in my life, I've been a full-time minister and I'm involved in a lot of other sections in civil society. I will say I was on that level for a long time. I believe in the ethics of individual rights. In post-apartheid Africa, we can see it develop in entitlement. Everyone, the rights to have rights. So it is the whole rights idea and so on. So it was not, I'm not pleading to say it is wrongfully, which we have at this point in time, like the international human rights. I'm only pleading that we should rather attend to what the Roman Catholics are doing very effectively concerning this whole thing about the common good. Maybe we should need to go back again and read again Augustinus and read again maybe Thomas Aquinas, read again maybe moral theology of the Roman Catholics in order to understand the common good means it is not only about, for example, if I can quote one of the states who are using now drones, they will say it is our right to defend ourselves even if we are more than 2,000 or 20,000 kilometers away from maybe the attack, the possible terrorist attack. It is the right, and therefore we must ask ourselves, isn't it about a common good? Shouldn't we ask ourselves, what is good for the whole society? Should we embark on this that we have in future maybe digital warfare? Or should we ask ourselves, is there something who's going to be blamed at the end if robots have the right to kill? So we must ask the questions as ethicists before we embark on this road. So I'm not saying it we could put a chapter post. I think we need both of it. So thank you, Zabralin Kumarima.
Thank you. I enjoyed it very much. It's on. to make a remark about the Peace of Westphalia. The states agreed not to interfere in each other's intrinsic or internal competencies, and that allowed the states to not observe human rights, because they will not be bothered by the other states which can do the same within their own spheres. But in connection with the idea of common good, I just want to suggest that if you look at any of the typical definitions we found, this morning we had one from Rawls quoted in the plenary session, then it's always encompassing all of society. And then my question is, can you identify any societal entity that could take responsibility for the whole of society without becoming totalitarian? So the idea of the common good needs just as much an intrinsic delimitation by the specific focus of what you have in mind. Otherwise, it becomes the opposite of what you aim for.
To comment?
I think it's a comment. It's not a question. It's a comment. I agree totally because you are on the right track. So it is what you say. It is one of... When we are embarking on this road, it's a new way we're going to endeavor asking ourselves the very same questions which people ask them when they constitute United Nations even. You see, it's the very same question. Oh, we don't know, we can't cast the road beforehand, but I think as long as we're going to travel, we're going to ask the questions which you're going to table, and therefore I plead for maybe more ethical, and therefore say quite clearly, I think we need international discussion on this whole issue, and I think then it will come out, all the different viewpoints will then be on, but I agree with your comment totally, 100%.
Thank you very much. I think maybe I'm just going to repeat what was being said using some other words, but safe to say that not long ago there was something on the news about countries spying on each other via the cell phones and so forth, the different countries. And my question would be very simple, using the common good as a point of departure. Spying is spying, and surveillance is surveillance. And how are we going to be able to tell the difference? And when is your human rights going to be violated? Because this thing is crossing all borders, taking into account that from cell phones, it's traveled now to drones, and you even mentioned the point that they're going to be used as weapons in the future, if not currently. So I think what needs to happen, this thing needs to get to a level where people really discuss this before it gets out of hand.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a
comment.
I do agree. I think what is needed is that on an informed basis, civil societies will come together. There will be faith-based organizations, as well as churches, as well as everyone who could, even governmental organizations and so on, should come together in order to discuss it thoroughly. Because what you want to raise is about what we call maybe information science and so on about, and therefore we need again to attend to this whole idea about information ethics as well. You see, so it is very important because it's ethical. The question it is what is built in all this in these programs across the globe and so on. So it is so that surveillance is taking part in a regular count while we're sitting here. So that is happening. But the question is what is the common good for us all? At this point of time, maybe it's needed to have surveillance about what is happening maybe across the globe. But there's also, I think, safeguards built in the legal system concerning your personal information and so on. So there is safeguards built in at this point in time. The whole argumentation concerning the armed drones is because the built-in of too much intelligence at this point of time in machines in order that they can make. Because what is a problem concerning a modern warfare is that they say that the weakest link in modern warfare is men, the soldiers. They can make maybe uninformed or maybe wrong choices when to kill or not to kill and so on. And if you send only out a drone, an armed, unmanned vehicle, then it means there's no one who's going to get killed on the side of those people who can afford to send in a drone. But in the other side, there will be a lot of casualties. So in that case, I think I plead again that we should make informed choices in future concerning the usage and not to close our eyes in silence when we take cognizance there of it happening in Africa continent, and rather ask ourselves how we're going to engage with the problem in future as well.